The following program sponsored by Christian Training and Development Services, Hanson Chiropractic, Northwest Family Life, Ludeman Capital Management, Network Services, and Cannon Beach Christian Conference Center.
Hello, and welcome to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. Mike is an author, teacher, and conference speaker, and is president of Christian Training and Development Services. Creation Matters is dedicated to the teaching of the biblical and scientific truths about God's creation. In the beginning, God created, and for by Him were all things created. And now here's your host of Creation Matters, Mike Riddle.
Welcome to another hour of Truthful Talking about Creation or Evolution. This is your host, Mike Riddle, and we have a very informative show for you today. But before I get started on what we're going to talk about today, did you, anyone notice about the new dinosaur find that they just found over in China? Did you read between the lines what really happened there? They found a mammal, the fossil of a mammal, and guess what was in the stomach of that fossil mammal? A dinosaur. Now, wait a minute. Those two aren't supposed to be living at the same time like that. So the whole evolutionary story has just been blown out of the water. And let me read to you what they're saying now. And here I'll quote this. Scientists say the animal's last meal probably is the first proof that mammals hunted small dinosaurs some 130 million years ago. Then they go on to say it contradicts conventional evolutionary theory that early mammals were timid, chipmunk-sized creatures. So here again, folks, they're going to have to go through and change their story once again. Isn't that incredible how many times they change their story? Why don't they just start with the Bible and get their story right the first time? Well, I want to let you know, I just came back from sunny California. I spent a week down there with a group of PhD geneticists and molecular biologists all talking about creation evolution. Now, each one of these gentlemen has their PhD in that area and come from all over the world. And some are research analysts, run research labs, or teach at universities. And guess what? All 15 of these scientists are Bible-believing Christians. All 15 of these scientists believe exactly as the Bible teaches, that in the beginning God created and He did it in six literal days. And they demonstrated that by using nothing but biology and genetics. Isn't that great that we have people with that caliber out there that believe God's word and don't fall for this story called evolutionism? Well, we're going to have a great show today. I have with me in the studio Pete Talbot.
Hey, it is so good to be here, Mike. You know, I was over in Juanita having a hot chocolate at Starbucks, and I all of a sudden I realized it's Tuesday night. Creation Matters is on. I got to get over there because this is my favorite show. I am absolutely blown away every time this program airs because of the beauty and just the incredible insights that you share. So thank you for allowing me. I'm just sort of sitting in as the Amen Corner here tonight, Mike, because I know you've got a very special guest that you're going to be introducing, and thank you for just letting me be here.
Oh, you're welcome, Pete. We enjoy having you on here every single time. We'd have you on here when you aren't here.
Well, when I can make it, I'm happy to be here.
Great. And if you want to get a list of the shows that we're doing, or if you want to get the actual show, we have them posted on our website so you can download them and record them on your own DVDs or CDs. You don't have. If you miss a show, you can go out there and listen to the whole show right off our website, creationmatters.org. Creationmatters.org. You'll see many other things out there, too. And if you're interested in this show tonight, you go out to our website and you click on a box that says Information. We have a little box on our front home page there. It says Information. Good news for Bible-believing Christians. You click there, and we have a wonderful news for you about our topic of our show tonight, Information. But also with me on the phone is a very, very special guest, Dr. Bob Compton. Dr. Compton, how are you today?
I'm doing just fine, Mike.
Dr. Compton, could you give us a little bit of your background before we get into the show today?
Well, academically, I started out on a pursuit of a degree for veterinary medicine. And once I received that degree, I practiced for almost 3 years. Went on to get a PhD in physiology. And then specializing with a major in neurophysiology and a minor in neuroanatomy. From there, I ended up in academia, teaching and doing research, and left there about 30 years ago because I was beginning to have serious doubts about all of the evolutionary information that was being integrated into the educational scene.
Now, wait a minute. You have all this education, Dr. Compton. You're also, I believe, a professor at university for many, many years. With all this education, you don't believe in evolution?
Well, I, before...
Talk about a loaded question there.
Yeah, early on, I accepted evolution because I just felt that all of those scientists, you know, could not be wrong. But as I looked at the evidence and looked at the data and tried to think about it myself, I began to have my doubts. And those doubts started in the early 70s, and by the late 70s, I was convinced that no, evolution is not the not the answer. And about that time, within 2 or 3 years after that, I began to discover there were other men and women who were studying this subject, and they were ahead of me on developing evidence that not only refuted evolution, but supported the biblical worldview.
Now, with all that work you've done, all those degrees and all that work as a professor and the work you're doing today, how do you find the time to do all this?
Well, I number one, I was fortunate enough to retire. Number two, I really can't get it all done, but I have a wonderful wife that this is now trade secret, Mike. Don't share this with anybody, but she does most of the work.
And what's her name, Dr.?
Her name is Patty.
Okay, so we can refer to her as Patty, the woman behind the man.
That's absolutely true.
Well, the topic we're talking about tonight, Dr. Compton, is information, something we all talk about, but what is it, and can we really define this thing called information?
Well, that's a good question. Some people say that information is everything or it's in everything, but that's really not a valid definition.
Now, you say information is everything is not a valid definition, but isn't that kind of the popular definition they're using today, that information is in everything? Why is that not valid?
Yeah, I'd say that is probably the most generally accepted definition of information today. However, a definition in science must have distinct properties that describe whatever it is that we're observing. For example, a very at home definition or example here, we could define a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And if we want to do that, we would say, well, that is peanut butter and jelly spread between two pieces of bread. That would give us a very strong definition. We'd all know what a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is.
Also a good hunger for right about now, too, wouldn't it?
Pardon me?
Also a good hunger for one right about now.
Well, for you especially.
Okay, so we've got a definition of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but that's the definition of peanut butter and jelly sandwich. How does that fit? Suppose I wanted to have something like a turkey on rye. Would that fit the definition of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Well, if we defined a peanut butter and jelly sandwich as everything or in everything, a turkey on rye would be up for grabs. Matter of fact, any type of sandwich could be. Matter of fact, who knows where the limits would be. If it's everything. And that's what the way it is when they define information as everything or in everything. There's nothing excluded in the whole universe. It includes everything, and by the definition of a definition says that's not a definition. That it doesn't exclude anything. It must determine what it's included and what is excluded.
And this is exactly what's happening in our school textbooks today. Aren't we, in our science classes today, not even giving valid definitions to trick our students? Those we see things like evolution is change over time. Is that a valid definition then?
No, that's not a valid definition. Matter of fact, it is a logical fallacy. For example, though, the way it works in a classroom, After teaching the students that evolution is change over time, the teacher could ask, name one thing in the physical universe that does not change over time. After thinking about it, the students could say, everything changes over time. Then the teacher might say, well then, evolution is absolutely true. And you know, the students, that just makes so much sense to them that they bite on that. And this is a good strategy for the evolutionists, but it is not good science. Evolutionists know exactly what they mean by chemical and biological evolution, so they should not confuse the students with other definitions of evolution.
Well, hold on, folks. We're going to be getting to the core assumption of evolution, and we're going to show tonight that that core assumption of evolution has been proven false. Hold on and bear with us. If you have some questions about this, give us a call at 800-955-8200. That's toll-free, 800-955-8200. And when we come back, we're going to go after the core assumption of evolution. So you have to stay tuned to this show and give us some calls about information. How did it start? 800-955-8200. Or go to our website, creationmatters.org, and click on that box that says Information, Good News for Bible-Believing Christians. Welcome back to Creation Matters, and we're talking about creation evolution, and our topic tonight is the origin and nature of information. Just what is information, and where does it come from? And with me is Pete Talbot. How do you feel about all this so far, Pete?
Just, you know, I can hardly wait to get to the next phase here, because I think I'm catching the drift. But I'll bet we have a lot of listeners that are sitting here just like I am, wanting a little review of what we just learned, and then let's take it to the next step. I feel like I'm in school, and I can hardly wait for the next class to begin. So let's begin, and I think your guest is wonderful.
Yeah,
so.
Dr. Bob Compton, who is a doctor of veterinary medicine and has a PhD in physiology. And we've covered so far kind of definitions. We looked at what the school systems and the textbooks are doing. They're changing definitions, so they're not even giving right definitions. For instance, we said evolution is change over time, and I see that definition in modern biology textbooks. That is not a valid definition. That cannot be a valid definition. A definition has to precisely say what it includes and what it excludes.
Okay, now what is, bring me back, forgive me, pretend I have an IQ of 80, all right? Now let's talk about that peanut butter and jelly sandwich and how that relates to this.
Okay, if I were to define a peanut butter and jelly sandwich as being all sandwiches, anything that has two pieces of bread and anything in between, and then I gave to you two pieces of bread, with let's say this, how about some hot sauce? Some extra hot sauce in the middle. Said, here's your peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And you said, that doesn't taste like peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But it is, by definition, a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, so eat it. That's what they're doing to our students, giving wrong and fuzzy definitions.
That kind of hacks me off.
It does, doesn't it?
That really.
And our students should be upset about this.
Our parents should be upset about this. Okay.
But you know, that leads us to another problem. We have our science textbooks. Do you know in our science textbooks over the last 30 years, they've been changing the definitions of science? They've actually changed the definition of science in the textbooks over the last 30 years. In other words, today the definition no longer includes the search for truth. No, they don't care about truth. You see, the definition of science now includes the words, the word naturalism. How do you correspond or respond to that, Dr. Compton?
Well, I agree with you. That's what they say. You know, naturalism, but what they mean by that is that in science, everything in the universe must be explained in terms of physical and chemical processes.
Physical and chemical processes, are you talking about like matter and energy, or just mass and energy?
Yes, that's exactly true. That's the basis for all physical and chemical processes. So what you're saying is it takes us right to the fundamental that only mass and energy can be utilized in any explanation in science.
And that is a core assumption of evolution. Is that what you're saying, Dr. Compton?
That is a core assumption. Matter of fact, it's a core assumption of modern science, but it's a core assumption of evolution.
And what happens if that assumption is wrong? What happens to evolution?
Well, it weakens evolution dramatically because if their assumption of materialism is true, they can logically conclude that everything that we see, including life forms here on this Earth, had to come from mass and energy alone. So that's a very strong logical argument they're making. But they're making it upon a premise that is an assumption that we're going to demonstrate in part tonight is false.
So hold on to your seats out there. We are going to undermine or show the core foundation or core assumption of evolution is false. And we need to get this information into those textbooks and into the public schools, folks, because what they're teaching is not true science.
Okay, what's the next step here now to proving this point that you're making?
Okay, good, Pete. So let's get back to information. Why is our understanding of information, which we all recognize exists, so important to this assumption of evolution?
Well, we've already covered the assumption of materialism. And the thing I wanted to add to that, just by definition, you see, they've eliminated that God is eliminated right off the bat. There's no God by that definition.
Well, wait a minute, before you go any further on that, I want you to continue with it. What you're saying is the evolutionists have eliminated God.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that incredible how many churches buy into evolution then and still use the Bible? How can they do that? How can they use the Bible, which talks all about God, and then believe evolution? Isn't that kind of almost like an oxymoron?
Well, it's worse than that. I spent probably 30 years of my life batting that ball back and forth, and that was not a fun place to be.
But go ahead. We were talking about this, why this is so important to understand information. We
well,
don't exist.
Yeah, their assumption is critical to the evolution model, and but the important thing about information that evolutionists don't want you to know is that information is non-material. It is a non-material entity.
Well, wait a minute now, Dr. Compton. You just made a big statement there. Evolutionist assumption says everything has to be material. But you're saying that something exists and it's called information is not material? Whoa.
That's correct.
So where do we go with that now?
Well, let me just say, I'm not the first one, you know, to say this. Many scientists have observed this. They know this. They've just had a difficult time, you know, getting down to the bottom of it. But the fact that there is another entity out there, I call it the third fundamental entity, added to mass and energy, that really undermines all of evolution.
If you're believing in evolution right now, you need to give us a call on this one, because you know what we just did? We just tore apart your whole foundation of evolution. Give us a call at 800-955-8200. You need to start talking about and see if you can defend what you're believing. 800-955-8200. Or if you're of a Bible-believing Christian, you need to call and say amen to that. Because, folks, we have just shown the core foundation of evolution is false because we know information exists. It is non-material. And that means evolutionists are in denial, folks, of real science. Isn't that wonderful news?
Now, I would imagine that we've got some school teachers out there that are Christians, and yet they are teaching evolution. They're following the guidelines of how they're supposed to teach, and they've got some questions. In fact, some mighty big questions right now. It's okay if some teachers give you a call?
By all means, we want to help teachers, whether they believe in creation evolution, we want to help teachers get back to the real definition of science, the search for truth, regardless where it falls.
Okay, so we can take calls from teachers, from parents, educators, you name it, Sunday school teachers, pastors. Give us a call, 800-955-8200. That's 800-955-8200. 8200. This is your opportunity to deal with two of the greatest minds in this whole area of evolution and creationism. take advantage of it. I know this is a tough subject. I know this is not a popular topic, but it's one that is critical that we discuss and we really get a handle on it. So give us a call if you'd like to, 800-955-8200.
Dr. Compton, how can people come up to snuff or up to date on this information? Is there anything being written out there for this?
Well, as Mike, you and I know that...
That was a leading question, didn't
you? Yeah, right. The two of us, along with the help of other PhD scientists, are developing an equipping course that will include a book and a DVD. And it's designed for laypersons, and it's to help them understand the importance of information and why Darwinian evolution is based on a false assumption. We can't cover very much here tonight. We can only maybe tweak their interest a little bit. But when we have that course out, I think it's going to take them a long ways to understanding where science could go if we didn't have this restriction placed upon it right now of materialism.
And you just did a lecture down in California, because I was there and watched you do this, on information in front of 15 PhD geneticists and molecular biologists, and every one of them agreed with what you had to say, really, that information is non-material and undermines the core foundation or assumption of evolution, which puts evolution on very shaky ground. You know what the Bible says about shaky ground? Don't build your houses there, folks, because they're going to fall down. We need to build our house on a solid rock. And that solid rock, folks, is not evolution. It's called Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Dr. Compton, I have a question for you. Where do you see the general science community heading? Are they starting to wake up in spite of their godless perspective? Are they starting to wake up at least to some of the reality of the science that we're talking about tonight?
Well, that's a hard question. I've been in academia, and for many, many years, I was caught in this turmoil. I think I had more concern over it than most, but I think most of the scientists, most of the teachers, especially at the lower levels and in public schools, they're just following what the experts are telling them. Now, the experts are doing research on this. They've got big grants hanging on all of their concepts and everything. They're not going to let go very easily. In addition, the concept of evolution has permeated our whole culture in all of our major institutions of power. And that's going to be kind of hard to weed it out. So I don't think this is a top-down thing that's going to be changed, that we have to start changing it from the grassroots up. And that's part of, you know, why I've agreed to speak on Mike's show here, because he does have an audience of grassroots people who are concerned about these issues, but they just don't have the evidence. When I was early on in my career, I didn't have any evidence to refute evolution, and I was afraid they were right. But in the last 30 years, the amount of evidence that has refuted evolution and established the existence of a being that has created all of life on Earth has finally come to light,
so
scientifically.
Stay tuned, though, because in this show, we're only going to give you just a little tidbit of what this book and DVD are going to be about. If you want more information on what this book and DVD are going to be about, go to our website, creationmatters.org. Click on the box on our homepage that says Information, Good News for the Bible-Believing Christian. And when we come back, I want to talk more about this. We're going to get to the core issue, folks. Why is information non-material? Give us a call, 800-955-8200. Can you defend evolution? Or if you're a Bible-believing Christian, you believe that God created 6 days just as he said, we want to hear from you also. God bless. Welcome back to Creation Matters. I'm your host, Mike Riddle, and we're talking about creation evolution this hour. And our topic is something called information. What is it, and how do we define it? So far, we've seen that the core assumption of evolution says everything in the universe has to be made out of mass or energy. It's called materialism. They do not recognize anything spiritual.
anything that's not matter or anything that's not material, they do not recognize that exist. But you know, we've just come across something called information, and everybody recognizes information exists, but you know it's non-material. Dr. Compton, why? Explain to me how information is non-material.
Okay, I think probably the best example we can use gets into your area, Mike, and that would be to take a 750 megabyte CD, a rewritable CD. And just in our minds, let's pretend that we have this scientist who's discovered all these very important things, and he has encoded all of his information on the CD, and it filled it up, which would be equivalent in a compressed form of about 150, 1,000-page books. So that's a lot of information that we've put on this CD. And we'll take that CD and we'll weigh it on the world's finest scale that can weigh down to the smallest measure. And then we will take that CD and erase it, and we'll weigh it again. And what would you guess the difference between those two weights would be?
I would take a guess. They have to weigh the same.
That's exactly true. So what we've established here with all that compressed information on there, that there is no mass in information. The other thing we've also established, if you remember the first law of thermodynamics, it says matter or mass and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. But what have we done? We've created this 150 volumes of 1,000-page books of information, and then we went and destroyed it all. And that's counter to the first law of thermodynamics. But now remember, the first law of thermodynamics is referring to matter. It's referring to mass and energy. It is the law of or about matter, about information.
So since we can either create or destroy information, it can't be material then, because the first law forbids that.
That's correct.
That means the evolutionists are denying the facts of science, aren't they? They're denying the laws of science. Let me try another example here, Dr. Compton. Suppose I were to take a whiteboard. For those of you who are older than me, chalkboards. Chalkboards. I haven't seen one of those in a while. But let's suppose I went up to this whiteboard and wrote all these wonderful words and calculations. Then erased them. Where'd the information go?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I'm asking you that question.
Well, poof, it's gone. Now, the chalk is still there. It's just not on the board. And it's not representing these symbols that you put up on the chalkboard anymore. It's either on the floor or on your eraser. So the mass or the matter that you're using create these symbols is still there. But the information that was carried by these symbols is gone.
So, in other words, again, like I said, the evolutionists are denying the facts of science. Anybody that's teaching now needs to understand that the first law of thermodynamics prohibits matter from being created or being destroyed. But we can erase information and totally destroy it. That means it has to be non-material. And what have we been talking about is the basic assumption, the core assumption of evolution? The core assumption of evolution is materialism. Everything in the universe is made up of matter, or meaning mass and energy. But we've just shown, folks, that is scientifically false. Evolutionists are denying science. They are up to their old tricks, though, aren't they, Dr. Compton? What, you know what they've done? They've redefined information. They've redefined information to mean information is everything. And that way they get around this. They're saying information is material, but we know better than that. Information is not material, because we can destroy it. So no matter how they define information, if they define it as something material, they violate the first law. No matter what they define it, they're going to be wrong and deny science. So we have to get down to this, Dr. Compton. How are we going to define this thing, information? So I'd like to talk about the definition of information and why it's going to be different from what these people think about and the way we see it in classrooms. Because in our classrooms, I open these textbooks, they really say information is everything. We need to get down to that. Are the evolutionists, do they understand information? Let me ask you that. Do they really know what information is, and how do they define it again, Dr. Compton?
Well, of course, we've talked about information being in everything or is in everything. But then there's another one of any group of physical symbols. We were talking about symbols just a moment ago. That would be like the English alphabet, which they define it as those physical symbols themselves. And so that makes it material. But this simply doesn't work. That's why we're putting together the book and the DVD, so that our children can spot these misleading strategies and know how to respectfully discuss these issues with their teachers and with their classmates.
Now, I've read some of these definitions, and one of the definitions says information is everything, but there's another definition. Could you describe one of the more famous definitions they're using also?
Well, you're probably referring to Shannon's definition.
That's correct.
Yeah, well, Shannon says that there must be a code.
Now, who was Shannon?
Shannon was a theoretician, and during the war he worked as
now, for you young folks, that's not the war we have going on now.
World War II. He worked in the area of decoding, and when he came out of that, he knew that what we needed was ways of determining the most efficient way of storing and transmitting information. And so he went about mathematically determining that, and he developed formulas for this, and he was very successful. And matter of fact, all the computers you work with, Mike, are dependent upon a lot of the work that Shannon started. But as he worked with these, then he and other people started putting together, they obviously asked, well, what is this information that we're dealing with? And they basically defined it anything with a code. And so the code could be not only the codes that we find in textbooks or any book that we could pull out of the library, but also random assemblages of letters, of characters, of symbols. And matter of fact, with his definition and the way he was utilizing information, it turned out that a book that was put together with a random assemblage of characters had more information value than, let's say, one of your finest books you can pull out of a library that has a lot of meaning.
Now, hold on now. What you're saying is random letters have more information than a well-written story? Now, if this was true, random letters written on a page is information, then let's draw this to a logical conclusion here then. Let's see how consistent the evolutions are. If that is true, random letters written on a page is information, then when students write reports in school, they should be allowed to just type at random, disregarding any punctuation, and get a good grade for it. This is nonsense, folks, but that's what evolutionists are calling information. Nonsense. You see, right here, the evolutionists are being very inconsistent. On one hand, they define information as being able to contain random symbols, and then will not accept this when students have to write random reports that have no punctuation in them. No wonder our students come out of school so confused about science, because evolution is one of the most confusing, inconsistent models we have on this dear Earth. So, Dr. Compton, are there any other reasons why the definition of information you're using is the best definition?
Well, I think I better first define for you, Mike, what information really is, according to our definition. Then I could go to that question.
Okay. We're going to go to a break here, and when we come back, we want to get that definition, because now we're at the meat. We've seen that evolution is materialism. We've seen that it's scientifically false. We've seen the inconsistencies in the evolution model, how they're telling students one thing and then trying to give them a grade for something else. Folks, give us a call, 800-955-8200. Can you defend your belief in evolution if you believe in evolution? We've just shown that it's going to be very difficult for you to do that. Give us a call, 800-955-8200. Welcome back to Creation Matters. I'm your host, Mike Riddle. We've been talking about information, a very, very tough topic. And if you've been with me all this time, congratulations. We've got about 6-7 minutes left. We've got three things we need to cover. One, what is the definition of information? What are the components? What makes this definition a valid definition? And what does it all mean? So, Dr. Compton, real quickly, tell me the definition of information or what composes this definition.
Definition of peanut butter jelly sandwich had three components, bread, peanut butter, and jelly. Information has four components, a code, meaning, expected action, and intended purpose.
Okay, now you mean code, meaning, purpose, and action are all parts of information. What do you mean by a code?
Well, okay, the easiest way to do this, let's just, in our minds, let's all go to a library, and we're going to pull off the shelf any book written in English, and we flip open the book to any page, and we go to any sentence, and now we're going to analyze that sentence. So for what we first thing we notice is that the sentence is made up of letters, and those letters come from the English alphabet, because it's a book written in English. These letters are grouped together, and they're separated by spaces, and we call each group of letters words.
So it has to have letters and words, and how about syntax?
Well, there's syntax as well, and syntax, if we have a sentence, we look at that and we see, okay, there's a subject to the sentence, there's a verb to the sentence, and there's an object, and so on. We have modifying
okay,
phrases.
Okay, so we got, let me hurry you through this, Dr. Compton.
Okay.
We only have about 4 minutes.
I know, I'm trying to
So
hurry.
We got letters. So there's many different kinds of codes out there. We have the English alphabet as a code, we have the Chinese, we have computer codes. So we have a code.
Yeah,
what do you mean by meaning?
Well, I can get there. I got to go one more thing on the code. If we go to an English dictionary, we find all of these words in that dictionary. That makes up our vocabulary. Now, each word in that dictionary represents or means something. You know, like the word APPLE means that red thing that we eat. Or, for example, PERSON means somebody like you or your friend Mr. Talbot there. If we go to a dictionary, that same dictionary where we have a vocabulary, we find the definitions for each word. So these words that are composed of symbols represent something else out there in reality. So that's what establishes meaning, when we connect those words to the reality of the world we live in.
Okay, then we have purpose, the third part.
Well, expected action actually is better to go next on. And this means what the author of this book, what did he expect when he wrote this book? Well, that's obvious. For almost all books, if the author expects that people that get their hands on his book will read it and study it.
Okay, then how about purpose?
Yep. Well, purpose is the overall intention of the author. And that is that, in general, that the people who read the book will gain an understanding and benefit from whatever topic it is that the book is covering.
So we have code, meaning, action, and purpose.
Correct.
Four components of information. And if all four of those aren't there, then it is not information.
Mm-hmm.
What makes that a valid scientific definition for information?
Well, the thing that's different about this definition and all the other definitions of information is that it is anchored in reality. Anyone, any of your listeners, any scientist, can examine any sentence of any book and come up with code, meaning, expected action, intended purpose. And these are components that we find in all information so defined.
Are there any scientific laws out there that back this definition of information?
Well, that's a very important question, Mike, because that's what makes this definition so beneficial or so important, because there are 10 scientific laws that have been developed, and they've been out there now ranging from 35 to 25 years, and they've never been refuted. And incidentally, for your audience, scientific laws are the highest level of science.
So you're saying the highest level of science. We have 10 scientific laws that back this definition, but
right.
All the other definitions are based on assumptions and theories and not in reality.
Yeah, these laws that were discovered are based only on this definition domain of information, not on any of the other definitions of information. They do not have scientific laws. And in classical science from Kepler through Maxwell, that includes Newton and all of them, they carefully defined scientific laws.
Let me interrupt you here just a moment, Bob. We're down to our final minute here. I want to get to the core, the real bottom line. We've talked a lot about science. We've talked about information. But what does it really mean? What does all this really get down to? And tell me in terms of that information we find in DNA, where does that information have to come from then?
That is the critical issue. Because we have information in DNA and it has all these four components, we know that it has to come from intelligence, because that's where all the information that we observe in human books and in human computers and all of their different systems comes from intelligence. The DNA information also has to come from the intelligence. The only difference is that intelligence has to be vastly superior to man's intelligence.
And that means, by the definitions we've just given of information, which is non-material, backed by 10 scientific laws, there has to be a creator God. Isn't that good news, folks? There has to be a creator God based on observable scientific evidence. Just as it says in Romans 1:19, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, folks. We have a creator God.
Dr. Compton, thank you for allowing me to sit in as your student today.
Appreciate you being here.
I hope I can sit in as a student again.
Well, we'll look forward to it.
You've been listening to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. If you'd like more information on today's topic or information about Christian training and development services, simply call 425-269-3196. That's 425-269-3196. Or go to the website creationmatters.org. That's creationmatters.org. And click on the KGNW radio box. Join us next Tuesday at 6 when we'll discover and discuss the truth that for by Him all things were created. That's all right here next week on Creation Matters, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live.